This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today is part of a series where we're taking a look at the epidemic of diabesity and why it seems that we can't lick the problem of weight loss. We're going to talk to the author of a great book entitled The Obesity Code, Unlocking the Secrets of Weight Loss. He is a medical doctor, a nephrologist, and founder of the Intensive Dietary Management Program, which provides a unique treatment focus for type 2 diabetes and obesity. And the book really is very, very good at explaining why it is that diets fail and why it is that so often we resort to medications to manage diabetes, which is a problem that is highly amenable to diet and lifestyle. So without further ado, here's Dr. Fung. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So the teaser on the book is why your body's own insulin is the key to controlling your weight. So I guess that's one of the central propositions is that if we have a proper understanding of insulin, that can lead to more practical diet strategies, correct?
Absolutely. I think that the thing that is a little bit unusual about obesity is that we don't really think about what causes obesity, and that's really the central question. So not just for obesity, but for any disease, you really want to know what causes it, because unless you know what causes it, you can't really treat it very effectively. So we never think about this question about what causes obesity, because we've been told for the last 40, 50 years that it's really all about calories. But what happened to the 100 years before that, before people even thought about calories, right? So the thing is that if you think that calories causes obesity, then the solution is to simply cut calories. And the thing is that we've done that. We've done that for 40, 50 years. We've cut calories. We've put calorie labels on foods. We talk about portion sizes. We talk about exercise. And it just hasn't worked, right? So no matter what you think about it, the proof is kind of in the pudding. It doesn't work. So to continue this sort of calorie paradigm is pointless. The other thing is that if you look at diet foods, for example, that's zero calories. Has it helped anybody lose weight? Not really, because honestly, if cutting calories by using zero-calorie foods, such as aspartame and stevia and so on, if that really was the solution, then we wouldn't have an obesity crisis because we'd just simply eat diet foods and then that'd be that. And there's fake fat. I don't know if you remember that.
Olestra and so on. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And we can eat zero-calorie foods, but it doesn't lead to weight loss. And that's the whole problem. So the thing is that when I started to think about obesity, I went back to think about it. And really, the whole calories idea doesn't work, because what actually happens, and we've known this for 100 years, is that as you cut calories, your body simply adjusts by burning less calories. So if you start off by eating 2,000 calories a day and burning 2,000, you neither gain weight nor lose weight. Now you go down to 1,500 calories and you think you're going to lose weight, and you do for a few weeks. But then what happens is that your body simply adjusts. And it burns 1,500 calories, now you're neither gaining nor losing weight. So you plateau. And every dieter knows this. You plateau, and then what happens is that you try even harder. You go down more. But then your body adjusts again, and you plateau again. So then finally you say, yeah, it's not worth it. So you go down from 1,500 up to, say, 1,700. So you're still eating less than you did before, but you start to regain all that weight. And then people say, oh, you failed because you couldn't stick to your diet or whatever it is that they say, which is really unfair because we know that this is what happens. So it's not really the calories in that's really important. It's the calories out that's really critical because eventually your body adjusts. And really what you have to understand is what controls that kind of body metabolism and so on. And it's really down to our hormones. Because everything in our body is controlled by hormones. So our body weight is not left to the vagaries of what we stick in our mouths. Like, if you think about it, people eat all different things throughout the world. There are all different foods. And traditionally, say 50, 100 years ago, there was very little obesity, despite the fact that caloric intake varied drastically, and the types of food we ate varied drastically as well. But yet there was no obesity. So how is it that if people really needed to count their calories, if they need nutrition labels to stay slender, how did they do it back then, right?
Well, so what has changed historically? What has changed historically that has led to this skyrocketing of obesity? A lot of people attribute it to, a lifestyle of leisure and, simple overconsumption. There's just a proliferation of foods. It's easy to get food. We have to work less hard. There are more labor-saving devices. Ergo, like a thermodynamic equation, calories in, and then we don't burn it off.
Yeah, and that sounds really good. It just doesn't really pan out. So, for example, people have looked at modern hunter-gatherers, and it turns out that they don't really burn any more calories than modern man. So, office worker living in some North American city, it burns about the same number of calories as hunter-gatherer.
So they don't work out like Iron Man triathletes. They kind of sit around the campfire a lot and tell stories, hang out. The guys, chat while they let the women do the dishes, sort of.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that people have been the same throughout all of history. If they don't have to do the extra work, they don't. So if there's plenty of food available, then they simply lounge around all day. So say on some South Pacific islands and so on, and they're eating coconut and fish, and there's plenty of coconut and fish, they just don't work very hard to get it because they don't need to. So they don't, right? They're not trying to work themselves out for no good reason, right? That's something that modern humans do, but in the past they don't. So the thing is that when you go back and look at what controls obesity, it all comes down to our hormones, and you have to understand that there are several hormones that are important, but the major one is insulin. So essentially, obesity is a disease of excessive insulin. So insulin is a normal hormone, but when we have too much of it, we get obese. So that's the starting point, because we know that when we give medications such as insulin or drugs that stimulate insulin, people gain weight. So for example, I can prescribe somebody insulin, and it doesn't matter what they eat, doesn't matter how much or how little they exercise, their lifestyle is exactly the same, but by moving to that insulin, they gain 20, 30 pounds, and they can't lose it. And they all understand that it's all because of the insulin.
Now, is this a mistake in our strategy for diabetes management? Because you're a nephrologist, you're a medical doctor, and you see plenty of diabetic patients, and nephrology professional often sees diabetics because that's what messes up the kidneys. So often these patients are given either oral pills, what are called hypoglycemic drugs, drugs that lower blood sugar, or sometimes to help them a little bit, if those oral medications don't work, say you're a type 2 diabetic but your blood sugar's in control, they give you a little insulin. That's the trend. They want to make sure your blood sugar is very tightly controlled so that you got a good number on your test. Is that in the interest of the patient ultimately?
I think that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. I think that the way that we treat type 2 diabetes, by focusing on the blood glucose and giving insulin, for example, to get that blood glucose down, is exactly the wrong strategy. Because obesity and type 2 diabetes, I think both are diseases of too much insulin. And we know this because type 2 diabetics, when you measure their insulin levels, they tend to be high. So the question is, if you have a disease where you have too much insulin, how does giving more insulin make it better? That's the real question, right? And that's where I think we've gone off the tracks, because for a while it does get better because you can force the blood glucose down with their insulin, which is the point, but you don't make the diabetes any better, because what happens over time is that you don't take more insulin and then all of a sudden your diabetes goes away, what happens is that first you take 10 units, then you take 20 units, and then a few months later you take 30, then 40. So all the while, your diabetes is getting worse and worse because you need to take more and more medications to control that blood sugar. So it's very much like alcohol. If you have a disease of excessive alcohol intake, giving more alcohol is not likely to be the answer. Yes, in the short term, the trembles go away and you feel better, but in the long term, the alcoholism is not better.
It's so like taking an eye opener in the morning, or the so-called the hair of the dog for a hangover, exactly. And that will ameliorate the symptoms of withdrawal, but ultimately create more problems long term. Okay, so insulin resistance, this is a term that's bandied about a lot. And so how do you explain this to lay people? What's going on? It's too much insulin, that's bad. Why should it be bad? If you've got too much insulin, that should help you control your blood sugar, right?
Well, it comes down to insulin resistance. So type 2 diabetes is a disease of excessive insulin resistance. That means the insulin no longer works the way it normally does, and your body becomes resistant to it. But the question is, what causes this resistance in the first place? And the thing that you have to understand is that the body resists things that are excessively high. So if you have, say you take a drug like nitroglycerin or narcotics or cocaine or marijuana, the first time you take that drug, it will have a very strong effect. But if you take it constantly, all the time, and alcohol is the same way, your body resists it because the effect is less and less. So that's resistance, because the body has a mechanism for homeostasis, which means it wants to stay kind of in its comfort zone. And if you push it out of its comfort zone, it's going to want to try and come back. So anytime you take a hormone or a drug that is too high, your body is going to resist it because that's what it normally does. That's a protective mechanism. So in essence, if you look at insulin resistance, what causes it? Well, it's the excessive high insulin resistance itself. So now you have a vicious cycle, because what happens is that if you start off with very high insulin levels, and they're persistently high, then what you get is insulin resistance. That insulin resistance is going to lead you to higher insulin levels, because your body's knee-jerk reaction is to try to produce more of this hormone to kind of overcome it. Mm-hmm. And it's like narcotic addiction or cocaine, right? So first you take a little bit, it has a great effect. The second, third, fourth, fifth time, it starts losing its effect, so what do? You take more of the drug, right? And then you get the original effect. But then it starts to wear off, so then you take more of it and more of it, and the body's the same way. So as you get that insulin resistance, your body produces more insulin, but that's self-defeating, because as you produce more insulin, you only develop more resistance. So people who are obese are stuck in this loop of insulin leading to resistance, resistance leading to excess insulin, and it's that excess insulin which is driving now that obesity. And that's why obesity is really a time-dependent disease. Because if you think about it, if it's all about calories or all about carbohydrates even, then you'd say that the person who's been obese for 30 years will lose weight the same way as the person who's been obese for 10 days, right? But it's not true. You know it's not true. I know it's not true. And everybody who's ever tried a diet knows it's not true. If you've been overweight for many, many years, you've been going around that vicious cycle for a long time, and it's going to be a lot harder to break, because you have to specifically target that insulin resistance cycle, because that's what's driving your obesity, not simply just your diet. And that's the thing. And the calorie theories and carbohydrate theories don't acknowledge this kind of time dependence, because they say, well, as long as you cut your calories, if you've been obese for 10 days or 10 years, it's the same. You're going to lose weight the same. But every single person who has done it knows that that is not true.
So what does insulin do to your appetite? What does insulin do to your carbohydrate cravings? What does it do to make your fat more resistant to giving it up and being burned as energy?
Yeah, I think it's this insulin and insulin resistance cycle that really sets our kind of body set weight. because it's sort of our body has a certain weight that it wants to be at. So this is like a thermostat. So if your body wants to be at 200 pounds, if you try to force feed yourself to 250 pounds, you could, but as soon as you stop force feeding yourself, you will naturally fall back to 200 pounds. But it works in the opposite way, which is the way we're mostly concerned with. If you're 200 pounds and you try and drop to 180, your body will now activate mechanisms to bring you back to the original 200 pounds. Because that's that kind of resistance cycle. That's set your set weight, right? And what happens is that your body will make you more hungry. And they've done studies on this, and they've seen that people who lose weight 10% over a year, they are more hungry. So their hunger hormone is higher, their satiety hormones are lower. And the other thing that it does is that your body will start to reduce its metabolism, okay? So if you're burning off less energy, then you're going to gain weight more easily because your body wants to gain that weight back up. Mm.
So the implication is, I mean, they have these diets now, which are 500-calorie diets, and they tell you if you stick to this diet, you'll lose 40 pounds in 40 days. And you can sometimes use spectacular amounts of weight. But what you're saying is the adaptation by the body to this strict deprivation will result ultimately in a slowdown in your metabolism and a susceptibility to gain all the weight back.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens in constant fast. So if you cut your calories constantly by a certain amount, that's exactly what's going to happen. So if you cut your calories to like 1,500 or 1,200 calories a day, eventually your body adapts to it by slowing down your metabolism. So the question is really how to get rid of this kind of, or reset your body set weight,
right?
Because that's what's really important.
Because otherwise, the title of your book would be The Obesity Code. You're screwed because of your insulin. Forget about it. But but you're going to go past that.
Right.
There's obviously a workaround.
Exactly, and that's the thing, is that once you understand it's all about the insulin and the insulin resistance cycle, as well as the foods that we eat, but also the meal timings and how we kind of space it, then yeah, that's the way to do it in the long term. And the funny part about it is that people have done it successfully for thousands of years, yet now in the last 40 years, with all our advances in technology and genetic engineering and all this, we all of a sudden have totally lost control of diabetes, obesity, metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, like all these diseases which have been with us for so many years. We've all of a sudden lost control of it, and I think it's because we've all gone to the wrong premise, which is the wrong starting point, which is it's all about the calories, right? And you hear that all the time, right? It's all about calories in,
right,
calories out. It's really not a caloric imbalance. It's a hormonal imbalance, right? And if you understand that, then you can say, well, how am I going to fix this hormonal imbalance? Because right now, the way we started is, how am I going to cut calories, right? Because we think that calories is the be-all and end-all. So how am I going to cut calories? And we've been trying to do that for so many years, and it's just been super unsuccessful.
Well, let's just take, for example, the low-fat diet. You know, the old saying is, no fat shall reach my lips, no fat shall reach my hips, you know, because it's the fat on your body you want to lose. So your fat is, you know, calorically the most potent source of energy that you can consume. So low-fat diets have been proposed for a long time as the ultimate way to lose weight. What's wrong with that approach?
Exactly, and that's exactly my point, is that the whole thing about fat being calorically dense falls back to the whole calorie paradigm, right? So the reason to cut out fat was because it had a lot of calories. And again, we've done it for so many years. But if you look and you say, well, okay, so if it's all about the calories, then cutting fat should work. But it doesn't, because calories was not the main issue. It was really an excess of insulin. And dietary fat, despite all the calories, stimulates insulin to a very, very low degree. So, in fact, it's not very fattening at all compared to, say, sugar or refined grains like flour, for instance. So if you're having cookies, for example, it's far more fattening because you could take the same amount of fat, say bacon, and cookies, And one is much more stimulating to insulin than the other. And therefore, one is much more fattening to humans, despite the same number of calories. And the whole calorie idea is quite ridiculous, actually, because it leads you to crazy ideas like, well, you could eat a plate of cookies for dinner because it's the same number of calories as this grilled salmon and salad with olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same number of calories, so they're equally fattening.
Right.
And if you told your grandmother that, she'd like smack you on the head and say, how are you such an idiot?
Right.
They are nothing alike.
Exactly.
Right? They are nothing alike.
Well, it's sort of like the old James Watt steam engine model of, you know, calories in the thermodynamic equation. And nutrition, they used to have something called the calorie bomb. They would actually put items into some kind of device that burned them. And then they would determine what their caloric value was. And, of course, that's a mechanical model that's not applicable to humans.
Exactly. Because, again, and people never understand this, that if you take in a certain number of calories, it's not the number of calories going in that's important. It's the number of calories going out that's important. So if you take 5,000 calories in, for example, and there was a fellow by the name of Sam Feltham who did an experiment online. He took 5,000 calories of a high-fat diet, high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet, and he didn't actually gain any fat, right? So his body responded to all those excess calories by burning it off. So it's not what's going in that's really important. It's what's going out that's crucial, crucial, crucial. The reason that we don't think about it is because it's really hard to measure what's going out, so we assume that it's steady all the time. But it's not. It can go up or down by 30-40%. And if it goes down, so if you cut your calories and your calorie expenditure goes down, then your heart beats a little slower, you don't pump as much blood, you feel a little bit colder, you feel a little bit more tired, you have no energy. In other words, you feel like you're on a diet, right? You feel like crap.
Right. Exactly.
The worst thing
deprivation.
Is that you stop losing weight.
Right, right.
And this is the problem, is that nobody ever thinks about it. Everybody thinks, oh, calories in, calories out, so therefore it's about cutting calories in. No, it's not. It's about the balance, but the crucial part is the calories out, because our bodies will adjust. Because, you know, if you think about it, cavemen, there were probably days that they ate 5,000 calories and days that they ate zero. Why?
Yeah.
Because one day they killed a mammoth and one day they didn't. Right?
That's sort of the paleo diet plan, which is actually periods of plenty alternating with deprivation, which is actually more what we are physiologically designed for, rather than, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, 1,800 calories a day.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but we've gone far, far past that. So if you look at the changes, so what's interesting is that if you look at the obesity epidemic, it's really only hit since the late 70s. And there are two major changes in our diet since the 1970s. One we talk about a lot, which is that we've gone to a very low-fat diet. And the problem with that, of course, is that that's all in the calorie paradigm. And by replacing those fat calories with refined carbohydrates, we've eaten calories that are far more stimulating to insulin, so insulin drives obesity, therefore that's more obesogenic. But the second change nobody really talks about ever is that if you look at the average number of eating opportunities in a day, in 1977 it was three, breakfast, lunch, dinner. So that's it. No snacks, right? You try and eat snack after school, your mom smacks your hand and says, you're going to ruin your dinner.
Right.
Right? You try and get a bedtime snack, and she says, what are you, crazy?
Well, it sounds like you grew up in the same house I grew up in. I didn't.
So we've gone from three meals a day to now, somewhere in the mid-2000s, closer to six a day.
Yeah.
Average. Right? So it's breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. And yet we think that eating more is going to make us lose weight. But all you do is you keep stimulating insulin all the time. So we've thrown our bodies kind of out of balance. Because, you know, in the mid-70s, people were still eating white bread, right? I mean, I ate sandwich every day for lunch for, like, 10 years, right? And that was no, sprouted grain bread, right?
Exactly.
That was white bread, Wonder Bread. So it wasn't that they were eating anything different, right? And lots of peanut butter and jam sandwiches, right? So the thing is that it's that we're eating all the time. And that's the thing we don't think about, because it comes down to two things. It comes down to what we're eating, but also when we're eating. We're eating from the minute we get up to the minute we go to bed, and we think that's a good thing. but it's not, because we're out of balance. We want to balance the time that our body is in this kind of fed state, which is insulin high, compared to a kind of insulin low state. And we used to be 3 meals a day, so breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, say 7 to 7, right? And then you don't eat from 7 to 7, so 12 hours eating, 12 hours not eating. Now we go, you know, 16, 18 hours. The only time we're not eating is the time we spend in bed sleeping, right? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Okay, well, let's pick up these themes in part two, because we've laid the groundwork for a discussion of why we get fat and stay that way and why our diet efforts are thwarted. The book is entitled The Obesity Code, Unlocking the Secrets of Weight Loss. Our guest, Dr. Jason Fung. And in part two, we'll talk about some practical suggestions for breaking the vicious cycle of insulin resistance. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.